Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio. I'm so glad you're all here today. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. And as I'd like to say, in North America, on planet Earth and the Milky Way galaxy, for my friends listening off-planet. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we'll do it. We'll make this planet a much better place. We are the Out of This World Radio, I'm proud to say, is the fastest growing spiritual, psychic, and UFO radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. And I guarantee today's show will be really interesting and out of this world. During the first part of this first hour, from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be replaying an interview I had last week with Chris Carter, the creator and producer of The X-Files. His interview will last about 20 minutes, after which I'll be playing segments of some very interesting speeches on UFOs with my own commentary by President Ronald Reagan, President Barack Obama, Gary McKinnon. And Mr. McKinnon hacked into the classified computers of the U.S. military and CIA to discover that the United States has an entire fleet of extraterrestrial spacecraft which can go into deep space. I guarantee that these segments will be really out of this world. During the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing a gentleman named Lauren Vincent, the author of a book called The 440 Enigma. Now, for those of I didn't know a thing about this before I ran across Mr. Vincent's book, and it's just absolutely fascinating. The natural rhythm, one of the natural rhythms of the universe is 432 hertz. It's part of what's called the Silvigo scale. And in 1940, though, the Nazis, under Joseph Goebbels, changed the standard of music in Germany from the 432 hertz, which is the natural rhythm of the universe, to the 440 hertz. Now, you may ask, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference between the two is that when you play music to the 440 hertz standard, it's been proven scientifically that it makes people agitated, that they don't want to work in harmony, and they end up fighting a lot. And, of course, back then in World War II, Joseph Goebbels, Adolf Hitler, wanted they had a war going on in Europe, and they wanted the German people to fight. So they changed the standard of music in Nazi Germany from the 432, which promotes peace and harmony, to the 440 hertz standard. Unfortunately, after World War II, as many of you know, thousands and thousands of Nazis were brought to the United States to establish our CIA and NASA space program. And with that came the influence that the United States adopted the 440 hertz standard for music here in the United States and worldwide standard in 1950. This will be a fascinating interview. And for those who are interested in promoting peace and harmony in the planet, this is a very important topic I think you should know about, because when you listen to a lot of music nowadays, it's at the 440 hertz standard. So you're subconsciously being programmed to be agitated and to live in disharmony, when if the music was at the correct 432 hertz standard, you would be far more open to harmony. Anyway, this will be a fascinating interview. And before we start, I'd like to thank everyone for their support. I know with everyone's help, we can make this planet a much better place. I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the wonderful Crystal Voyage Bookstore in Tacoma, Washington, and Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. I'd also like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol's been designing my website and providing wonderful support, my dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start my program, and my dear friends at the Emoto office, including Michiko Hayashi, Mrs. Emoto, Dr. Yasu Nimoto, and Hiro Emoto of the Emoto Peace Project Emoto office in Tokyo, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my sound engineers, Eric, and my sound engineer, station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. I've started a new spiritual mentoring program. I'll be happy to give people spiritual help in contacting their guides and loved ones who passed on. If you're interested in that program, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you're welcome to call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or 1-888-879-8339. Out of This World Radio is supported entirely by donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Just click on it. I really want to thank everyone for their wonderful donations and support, especially Judith in California, who's been giving a lot of wonderful support to the program and many, many other supporters. We're also looking for advertisers as well. If you're interested in advertising on the show, please contact me. You'll be able to get a worldwide audience for your goods and services. I also have a new column on my webpage called Ask Ted. When you click on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, just click on the About Us and you'll see a little advice column. You're always welcome to ask questions. You can always listen to the show live. In addition to being on in the Seattle area on the internet at www.1150kknw.com. Or after the show, the shows are usually posted within 24 to 48 hours on the website at outofthisworld1150.com. I wanted to tell people some upcoming events. Next month on March 4th and 5th, I'll be speaking at a UFO conference in Ocean Shores. If you're interested, please send me an email. For those of you in Finland or in Europe, I'll be speaking at a spiritual conference on the future of humanity in Helsinki, Finland on May 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. With some really interesting people, including Professor Jerry Pollack of the University of Washington, Professor Irvin Laszlo, who's one of the world's most famous scientists, shamans from the Hopi tribe in Arizona, Russia, and Africa, and Michiko Hayashi of the Moto Peace Project in Tokyo. The conferences will be open to the public on May 14th and 15th, and for more information or tickets, please go to my website. Then on June 10th through the 13th, I'll be having my second annual Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington. It's right off of exit 114 on Interstate 5. We'll have a lot of really interesting people coming, including Scott Lemriel of the Ceres Agenda, who's had face-to-face and telepathic contact with the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. The first day, June 10th, will be free, with June 11th and 12th, the same cost as last year, which was $197. And also, too, I want to emphasize, on Monday, May 13th, we'll have a very special presentation of Hado machines from the Emoto office in Tokyo. The Hado machines are fascinating machines. They're used as a diagnostic tool. And what you do, you place your hand on a pad, and it will analyze almost any spiritual or physical condition, including going back into your past lives and into it also can see for things in the future. And then it can recommend some things to help you. It's a diagnostic tool, and it's a fascinating, fascinating machine. So if you are in the area, please plan to stay that extra day on June 13th. On August 20th, 19th, 20th, and 21st, I'll also be a speaker, keynote speaker, at a worldwide spiritual conference in the Dominican Republic. If you're interested, please go to their website at www.paxluxmissionmaryundi.com, or please go to my website at outofthisworld1150.com. Also, at the end of August, August 25th, 2016, I'll be taking a group of up to 20 people to see John of God in Brazil. John of God is a wonderful, fascinating medium who's been able to contact Jesus and other higher spiritual angels to help people heal any physical or spiritual condition. If you're interested, please send me an email and I'll be happy to send you the details. Within the next week or two, I'll also be launching a new television program called Out of This World Television. The purpose will be to raise consciousness and make this world a much better place. My first guest on the new program will be Michiko Hayashi of the Moto Peace Project in Tokyo. And thanks to the wonderful wonders of technology, modern technology, she'll be in Tokyo. I'll be here in Seattle, and it'll be broadcast on the internet. But we will have more information on that next week. With that, what I'd love to do is to go to our play the intro for the X-Files and then go to a replay of my wonderful interview with Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files. And then I have a whole bunch of things to go over after that later on. So please stay tuned. Thank you. Here's an interview I had last week with Chris Carter. I wanted to replay again as an intro. We'll be talking about UFOs after his interview in a few minutes. So please listen. This is a fascinating interview. Hello, Chris. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for calling in today.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate it. I'm sorry. It sounds like you're having a busy day there. So
it is a busy day.
Oh, well. Well, thank you so much. You're being heard in the 3.1 million Seattle and Puget Sound areas, as well as up in Vancouver and Victoria, Canada, and over 60 countries around the world. And I just want to thank you so much for your incredibly interesting career and X-Files and everything. And one of the things that really stands out about you is that, of course, when you watch X-Files, the first thing you see is the truth is out there. So
yeah,
and I would just want to thank you for your series. It's incredibly interesting. I have to ask you this, Chris. What inspired you, for example, to do the there's lots of different episodes of the X-Files, which are so interesting, but the one that really caught my eye was, I think it was last Sunday or Monday, called My Struggle. Of course, about UFOs, and you had a clip you played of President Obama on UFOs in Area 51. And then Edgar Mitchell. How did you get interested in this field?
You know, I came to it kind of indirectly. I was given, now so long ago, about 1992, mm-hmm. a scientific survey done by Dr. John Mack that, you know, came to the conclusion that a significant number of the population believed they had either had contact or had been abducted. Mm-hmm. Or believed in the phenomenon. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a really interesting way mm-hmm. into a TV show, a scientific way. I'm interested in science, first and foremost, and mm-hmm. science fiction tangentially.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating, fascinating. Well, I'm a psychic. I've been a psychic for, been in contact with the other side for 22 years, and being able to contact the other side has enabled me to also contact some benevolent extraterrestrials. And I've been in contact with entities from what's called the Galactic Alliance for the past 2 years. And they're here to say hello to you, by the way. And they want to thank you for your wonderful work, because you're helping to raise the consciousness of this planet in a positive way as to what's going on.
I think, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They are benevolent entities. They're between 50 to 100,000 years ahead of us, and technologically, and between 30 to 50,000 years ahead of us spiritually. They're positively based and based in service to others. We actually look like them. If you were to see them, they'd look like us. Some of them are slightly different. If you for example, humans from the Andromeda Galaxy have slightly blue skin. Of course, ours is pale, or depending on what, you know, of course, race you are. But the people in Africa, they say, actually came from the Andromeda Galaxy many millennia ago, and during the time of course of being here on the planet in Africa with the harsh sun, the skin color changed to far darker to a black color. People in Asia, they tell me, came actually originally from Mars, and they escaped Mars and came originally to China, and they spread throughout Asia. One of the things that they're telling me now, to tell you that if you'd need help with some future X-Files episodes, they'd be happy to give you some material on them if you want, and you can incorporate it into your X-Files.
It all sounds amazing.
What I'll do is this weekend, they said, for, if it's okay, I can send you an email and just list you some things. One of the reasons why the planet, they say, is messed up as it is because our president, President Eisenhower, signed a secret agreement with a group of aliens called the Reptilians back in 1954. And in exchange for some of their advanced technology, to fight the Soviet Union back in the Cold War, Eisenhower allowed them to abduct humans and study us. Unfortunately, they are negatively based, and one of the things that they do is they feed off war and conflict on this planet. And in other 22 other star systems, my friends in the Galactic Alliance said that they have come to a planet like Earth and slowly taken control of its its inhabitants and resources, and they ultimately destroy it as, after they've taken out as much as possible. They're not going to let that happen here. And the timeline has actually changed from that of a third world war in a couple of years to a really beautiful new future for all of us. And so they're wanting me to tell you that. And also, too, I think it's important to note that the kinds of things that that I do as a psychic and many psychics do on the planet will become far more commonplace here on planet Earth in the coming decades. The change will, according to, we're on a timeline now where this transformation will finish within about, they said 20, 25 years. And things will be very, very, very different at that point. There is free energy out there in the Secret Space Program. I had Corey Good on my show, who was in the Secret Space Program for 20 years, and that's what they use out there. And the Secret Space Program, actually, he said, was a result of this agreement that was originally signed by President Eisenhower back in 1954. But you've done an amazing job of incorporating a lot of different interesting trends and educating the public as to what's going on. One thing I wanted to tell you is that I had a lady on, Susan Miller, on my show about 2 years ago. And she's an astrologist from New York City, one of the best. And she said one thing that stuck in my mind, Chris, was that this decade into the 2020s, 2030s, is a time of truth. And it's a time of disclosure. And then when I saw your wonderful X-Files episode earlier in the week on Sunday, I thought, well, this is what's happening. People are getting, their consciousness is becoming more and more exposed to what's really going on. I have to ask you, what kinds of shows are you planning for the future?
Well, the episode that you're referring to, mm-hmm. which is part of our mythology series, it's kind of the ongoing saga of the X-Files, connects to an episode that is the bookend to the short series of six that we did, and they both deal with similar subject matter. Mm-hmm. It features the character, if people know the show, they know we brought in a new character named Tad O'Malley, mm-hmm. who is a person who is, some may recognize as something like Alec Jones,
oh, yeah.
or Glenn Beck, mm-hmm. He is featured again in the sixth episode. So we bookend the standalone episodes with these two mythology episodes, which I think you and hopefully your listeners will find great interest in.
Oh yeah, they love this stuff. And my show's name, of course, is Out of This World Radio, and I'm starting my own television program next month called Out of This World Television. It'll be internet based on February 12th. But I go into all kinds of areas with UFOs, and I also bring on people who have had either face-to-face physical contact with benevolent extraterrestrials or telepathic communication with them. As a psychic, it's easy for me to contact the benevolence on the other side, and I do that on a regular basis. But they're all saying now that you're being supported in your work, and I know that we just can't wait till your next one for your upcoming shows. One of the things I know that you introduced about an abductee. O'Malley introduced Mulder and Scully to an abductee who Mulder had previously interviewed for the X-Files. And I just want to give you a little bit of background between the abductions. In the reptilian race that Eisenhower signed this agreement with back in 1954, they have several subspecies which they control. And one of them are called the Greys. And the Greys themselves suffer from what's called progenesis. It's a genetic disease in their DNA. And because the way they replicate themselves is through cloning. It's like kind of like taking a picture, a Xerox copy of a photograph, and they copy it over and over and over again. And if you do that after a while, what happens is that the picture breaks down so you can't see the details anymore. And with genetics, their species has practiced cloning for many thousands of years, and their DNA is actually breaking down. And there's two reasons that they're doing the abductions, is to create this hybrid species between the Greys and humans, so that they can increase the longevity of their own species. The Greys themselves don't have any emotions; they're a robotic biological species, but they don't really have a soul. It's kind of difficult to explain. they're emotionless, and by hybridization with humans, they're trying to bring back into emotions into their species and plus extend their longevity. The other thing too is that the grays, the environment right now is too oxygen rich for them, and so by hybridization they're able to live here. Do you remember the TV show? It was back in the early 90s. It was about a hybrid alien human race that came to live in Los Angeles. I don't remember the name of it, but the Newcomers or something. Do you remember that?
There was a show on called Alien Nation. Is that what you mean?
That's it is. Yeah, Alien Nation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it. And I often think that sometimes shows come out and they're actually a preview of actually what's been happening. And I always thought about that show because I think that's what's been going on behind the scenes. But you have to remember that the negative entities on this planet, their technology is not that advanced. We're talking maybe to 3,000 to 5,000 years ahead of us, when the technology of the Galactic Alliance is up to 100,000 years ahead of us. So they can clearly, if there was a conflict between the two sides, the benevolent galactics would win. But they have to be very careful, because one of the things that the reptilians have done, my galactic friends tell me, is that they've installed a doomsday bomb here on the Earth, and at any time they could set it off. It's an antimatter device in which the entire planet would implode in and of itself, and all the souls here would be gone. But the Galactics aren't going to let that happen, but they're working slowly behind the scenes now, they tell me, to change things for the better. The other thing, too, and this might be fun for a future X-Files episode, is that there's not only this planet in this dimension as well in the solar system, but there's also another 39 planets in other dimensions, ranging up to the 11th dimension in this solar system. And they said that everything's linked, each planet is linked to each other, and that if we were to destroy this planet, that would upset not only this solar system, but also these other planets in this solar system, the other 439, which would affect other solar systems in this galaxy, which would affect this galaxy, other galaxies, this universe, and other universes as well. I've been talking so much, I wanted to give you this. They popped in and wanted me to give you this information. Chris, I hope you don't mind.
It's fascinating to me, and I hope that you can send me a recording of this conversation, because I want to chew on this a little.
Okay. I have a lot more to tell you. It would take me some time to do that. The other thing, too, I'm picking up as a psychic is that it's your purpose, one of your sole purposes, to come in to raise consciousness on this planet. I myself was a priest in Atlantis 12,500 years ago, and I tried to turn things around back at that point, but I failed, and this whole civilization ended up exploding itself. We're back playing the same dance again, but this time we're both trying to raise consciousness in our own way on this planet, in a good way, try to educate people as to what can be done to make it a better place. I don't have your email, but I can call Kim if you like, and I can get that from her. Or send it to
her. That would be terrific.
Okay, I'll do that. Ambassador Twelling is asking me if you'd like to ask any questions on him on air. He's here. He's with the Galactic Alliance.
I'm sorry, who's asking that?
Ambassador Twelling, he's a human from the Seyres civilization. He's quite tall. He's about 19 feet tall. He's human, but he's a tall guy. And he's
19 feet tall?
He's 19 feet tall. He's in the sixth dimension. He's with me now, and I know this sounds like the X-Files, but anyway, he's here. He's here, and he's 10,000 years old. Among his species, they can live up to 25,000 years.
But holy moly!
Yeah, and he says we're all a bunch of babies on this planet. You know, we just on a normal human planet, he says, Chris, that most people live to about 1,000 years. The Andromedans are an exception. They live an average of 3,000 years, and they use vocal cords only as a secondary way of communication. They do a lot of communication through telepathy. But if there's any questions you'd like to ask him, he'd be happy to answer them for you.
I'd like to ask, then, what is retirement age if you live to 3,000? When do you actually start drawing Social Security?
Well, another good question to ask, too, is that if you get divorced, how many thousands of years do you have to pay child support? That's a really good question. Or alimony, how long do you have to pay? How many thousand years for alimony? He's telling me they actually have, he says that's a good question. He's laughing, actually. He said that they can have a series of families during that time because they do live for quite a long time. Among the Pleiades, he says, which are a member of the Galactic Alliance. The Pleiades look just like us, by the way, except they're a little taller and they've got their earlobes are a little longer. Their average age is about 1,000 years. They go to school for the first 70 years of their life, and by the time that they're ready to enter their professions, they have the equivalent of like 5 PhDs in our educational system in their life. As far as divorces go and that kind of thing, relationships are entered into based upon love and harmony, and they don't have the kind of conflict that we have in this society, which is nice. People know each other on a soul level. And they exist in the fifth and higher dimensions. And when you do that, he's saying that let's say if you're dating, for example, and you meet somebody you like, you can read their minds just like that in the fifth dimension. It just comes clear, and vocalization becomes secondary in business relationships and business dealings. In the higher dimensions, the truth is totally transparent. There's no such thing as hiding anything from anybody. And that makes for a far more open and happy society. In this third dimension, there's 12 different dimensions. I'm talking fast because there's a lot to tell you. The 12th dimension actually is where the Supreme Being or the Creator resides. And the rest of the dimensions from the third all the way to the 11th is where there's 40 other planets within the solar system. We're in the third dimension here. The fourth dimension on this planet is time. The fifth dimension is where we're headed for in the next 20 years. And you're helping, they say, to raise people's consciousness so that we'll have a nice, smooth transition.
This is amazing. So there are 12 dimensions then or 11 dimensions?
There's actually 12 dimensions, and the 12th dimension is where the Supreme Being, the Creator, is that created all of this. And then we're... And one of the reasons why we have such a huge range of emotions on this planet, we swing back and forth, is that at one time... He says that we were up the 11th dimension, almost to the Supreme Being, and we decided to go back to school, graduate school, if you will, he's saying, and go back down to the third dimension and work ourselves way up again. We've had several chances to move into a much higher evolved society. The 12,000 years ago was Atlantis, but that they ended up destroying themselves. The second one of the many opportunities we've had recently is with President Kennedy, who behind the scenes had been in contact with benevolent extraterrestrials from the Galactic Alliance, but he, as we know, was assassinated back on November 22nd, 1963. I've also been in contact with him on the other side as well. But President Kennedy has popped in now. He's saying hello to you, and he said that history works in cycles, and we're repeating history again, but in a good way, because the good things that are coming about now are the things that tried to come back in the early 60s, but failed because of his murder. But now things are coming back, and things are changing for the better, and you'll be able to see the changes here coming this year and into the rest of this decade of the 2020s and 2030s. Our children and children's children will have a far brighter and happier future and easier time than we've had, he said.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I have to ask you, though, I mean, you're saying you've had contact with benevolent beings. Have you had contact with the opposite?
I stay away from them.
The beings who are not benevolent.
Right. No. I stay away from them. I can tell you more about that off air. I've only got a few seconds left, Chris. But if I could call you back, I could tell you more. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. You're doing a wonderful job.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. This has been an education for me.
Oh, good, good. I'll call you back and also send you an email with my ideas. Some ideas from the Galactic Alliance.
Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on today. Hello, friends. That was I really enjoyed interviewing Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files. I did send him a a long, long email yesterday on a bunch of material, and I hope you'll find it useful. This next clip, I want to have a series of clips I want to play for you. The first one is where Ronald Reagan admits that there are UFOs back in 1986. This is a speech before the United Nations.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? What could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat?
And more secure for you and your children. I couldn't help at one point in my discussions with privately with General Secretary Gorbachev, when you stop to think that we're all God's children, wherever we may live in the world, I couldn't help but say to him, just think how easy his task and mine might be in these meetings that we held if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet, outside in the universe. We'd forget all the little local differences that we have between our countries, and we would find out once and for all that we really are all human beings here on this earth together.
I really like what President Reagan had to say back then. I think it's very profound. This was in 1986, some many years ago, and I hope you found that very interesting. The next little clip is a piece from Barack Obama where he was on the Jerry Kimmel Show in March of 2015. It's very interesting. Please listen carefully to what he says.
So this is something I feel like if I was the president, and it's unlikely that that is ever going to happen.
You never know.
If I was the president...
It was unlikely that I was going to be president.
The moment I was inaugurated, my hand would just... It'd still be hot from touching the Bible, and I would immediately race to wherever they have the files about Area 51 and the UFOs, yeah. And I go through everything to find out what happened.
Right.
Did you do that?
That's why you will not be president. that's the first thing that you would do.
It's at
the aliens won't let it happen. You reveal all their secrets. They exercise strict control over us.
Now, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to examine your facial expressions here, every twitch, everything, and say, and of course, so did you look? Did you see? Did you explore?
I can't reveal anything.
Oh, really? Because President Clinton said he did go right in, and he did check, and there was nothing.
Well, you know, that's what we're instructed to say.
All right. Hi, I'm Jimmy Kimmel. Are you sad that the video is over? Well, subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Well, that was interesting, wasn't it? Actually, there's a gentleman called named Dr. Michael Sala. He's a wonderful man, one of the world's best UFO researchers, and he has a research institute on the Big Island of Hawaii called Exopolitics. And if you look at his website at exopolitics.com, you'll find an analysis that he did. He hired actually some forensic experts from several police departments, and they went through Mr. Obama's interview with Jerry Kimmel and found that that Mr. Obama, although he was joking, he was telling the truth, and what he was saying was serious. But if you go to Mr. Sala's website, you'll find that analysis. I think you'll find it very interesting. The next clip is one I ran across last night on YouTube. It's incredible, but this fits in with what Scott Lemriel has said in his book, The Ceres Agenda, that many of our presidents are actually surrounded by another species, by reptilians who look like humans, but they're not. This is a YouTube with footage. I can't show it. Unfortunately, I can't show the footage on the air, but I can play you the video from it. Where this I saw it last night where this Secret Service agent, on the video, it's not photoshopped, but he changes from being a human to a reptilian and back to a human again while on camera. And you'll listen to the commentary by this gentleman. If you want to look this up, just find YouTube and plug in Obama's Alien Secret Service Spotted at 2012 AIPAC Conference. And we'll go ahead and play that now.
Well, good morning, everyone. During Barack Obama's speech at 2012 AIPAC Policy Conference at the Washington Convention Center, the camera spotted a very odd individual, who may be either with the U.S. Secret Service, or with the Israelis, and could be a strong evidence of a shapeshifter alien humanoid working for the powers that be, caught in a high-definition video during an event of the Zionist cabal.
Four years ago, I stood before you and said that Israel's security is sacrosanct. It is non-negotiable. That belief has guided my actions as president.
Even though at first sight he looks just like the average Secret Service spook, a series of odd features on his head, face, plus a very strange behavior and creepy movements, suggest something else. But due the low lighting in half the amphitheater, he would pass unnoticed or regarded as a normal human being by the crowd, and everybody who watched this video, if it was not by the camera of the Jewish News 1, which caught him from another angle apparently shape-shifting into some sort of reptilian non-human form. Disregard all the distortions and image artifacts caused by post-edition zooming, and pay close attention to how his head features suddenly change. His ears, his nose, his chin, cheekbone, jaw and mouth are no longer looking human at all. Matter of fact, now he has a blatant non-human face, so what just happened? Did his shape-shifting device fail during Obama's speech, in the middle of an amphitheater crowded with people? Is he an actual reptilian humanoid? Is he one of the Anunnaki? Is he a tall gray bio-android, or what? Is that video evidence that the Illuminati elite is in bed with at least one ancient extraterrestrial race, hidden in plain sight, and pulling the strings of mankind?
There's a lot of questions issued by that came up to me when I was watching this, and I will have the links for this on my website for today's show within a couple days. The next one is on Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden was a former security analyst for the National Security Agency of the United States. And he leaked many, many thousands of sensitive documents, and including that documents that aliens were working with the United States government. This is a short clip from Fox News, and I think you'll find it interesting.
And now some fresh pickings from the political grapevine. Our top story today was Iran taunting the U.S. over the sanctions negotiations. Now an Iranian news agency is making some other accusations about the U.S., and they're interesting. The Washington Post writes, Fars, which describes itself as Iran's leading independent news agency, claims documents leaked by Edward Snowden provide, quote, incontrovertible proof that an alien or extraterrestrial intelligence agenda is driving U.S. domestic and international policy. One Washington Post blogger wrote that while the story is entertaining and filled with bizarre conspiracy theories, quote, this is a reminder of how some hardliners see the world.
Well, I think that that just was Fox News commentary. You can ignore that if you like, of course. This last clip is with a gentleman named Gary McKinnon. He is a Scottish man who hacked into the U.S. military and CIA computer databases and found that the United States actually has a secret space program with 8 or 9 galactic cruisers that go into deep space. And here's a fascinating interview that was done on Rich TV last year from England. Please listen.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Rich Planet TV. I'm Richard D. Hall. We've mentioned NASA on the show many times before, and I have even had email contact with Robert Manning, an engineer who is ostensibly the chief engineer on the Mars Curiosity program. He agreed to answer technical questions about the mission, but then ran away from my questions when it seemed he could not answer them, affirming the phrase that NASA stands for, never a straight answer. If you don't believe what I have just said, then please watch this lecture from the link on the screen, which includes evidence that Curiosity may not be situated on Mars and could be in the Canadian Arctic. I am joined today by somebody who has also had communication with NASA, albeit in a slightly more surreptitious method. I'd like to welcome onto Rich Planet, Gary McKinnon. Welcome, Gary.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me on.
All right, then. I think a large number of my viewers will know who you are already and have the outline of your story, which we will go through the basic points of today.
Yep.
And it started with an interest in UFOs. Can you tell us first, when did your interest in UFOs start?
UFOs specifically. Well, I was always into stars. Apparently, even when I was 3 years old, I was always asking about the stars and stuff. So I was always looking at the sky from a young age.
Your interest in UFOs goes back a long way, and I've not heard this on mainstream TV before, right back to the age of when you were 12.
Yep.
So tell us about that.
My stepfather, because my parents split up when I was six and we moved down from Glasgow to London, my stepfather was an avid science fiction fan, so I suppose that's what really got me into all that sort of stuff. And yeah, science fiction, you get interested in aliens and UFOs, and the possibility of life in outer space and contact with other beings is probably one of the most exciting things we can imagine, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I then joined BUFORA, the British UFO Research Association, when I was about 12. It was a subscription-based thing, and you got a monthly newsletter, if I remember rightly. It was a long time ago now.
Right, right. Yeah. All right, so how did you find out about the Disclosure Project?
Well, obviously, having an interest in UFOs, when the internet came to Britain in the mid-90s, an incredible resource for UFO information. And so after a while, you do stumble across the... Well, actually, I was already interested in just finding out stuff. But then, was it 2000 or 2001?
2001 was the conference.
That's what really got me going, that conference.
Right.
To me, that was mind-blowing. All these high-level witnesses, you know.
Right, because it wasn't widely publicised.
No.
So how did you know about it when it came about?
I think someone else told me. Right. And they told me before the event took place. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm right in remembering at the time, they had some kind of broadcast failure as well.
Right.
So it didn't reach the sort of multicast internet audience that they hoped it would at the time.
Okay. Yeah. So that was your inspiration to try and find out more, the Disclosure mm-hmm. Project, or one of the pieces of inspiration. So I gather it was after the Disclosure Project conference that you got sort of caught red-handed with your computer-related activities.
Yeah.
Were you involved in computer-related activities before the Disclosure Project, or was that the...
That was the instigator to
right.
having a look,
right.
if I can call it that.
All right. So can you just tell us how you went about trying to find out information that you thought was being kept secret?
Yep. Part of the one of the Disclosure Project witnesses is Donna Hare, and she was working at Johnson Space Center at NASA. She had secret clearance. She was a photographic sort of mission launch specialist. Mm-hmm. And she said that one day when she was working in Building 8, so she actually mentioned the building of Johnson Space Center, JSC, there was a colleague who was in another room, but they all had secret clearance, but they're on different projects. Mm-hmm. And she was in this chap's lab or room, whatever it is, and he said to her, come and take a look at this, you know, what do you think this might be? And he showed her a picture of a large white disc, presumably a satellite photograph, above the Earth, but not very high above the Earth, because there was a shadow on the trees, which Donna Hare didn't spot at first. And being a photographic expert, she said, well, is that a blob in the emulsion? That's her first professional thought. And the guy said, blobs in the emulsion don't cast circular shadows. And she basically said that he told her his entire lab was to do with airbrushing out UFOs from high-res satellite imagery from NASA, because they're so preponderant mm-hmm. around the planet.
Right, and the, she gave the name of the building that she was working in.
Building 8.
Building 8. Mm. So just tell us then technically how you went about trying to access information like that.
Yeah. Well, I was already on Johnson Space Center, you know, in terms of my illegal presence there, because they ran Windows. They were running something called NetBIOS over the internet. NetBIOS is an office protocol, basically, for Windows. It's very insecure. There's no way you should be running that open to the internet. So it was very easy to get in. And
so I'll just interrupt you there, Gary. So you would need the IP address that's running the NetBIOS initially to try and request data from it, yeah?
Yeah.
So, so how did you find the IP address of Building 8 or whatever system you were trying to access?
Yeah. Well,
that's publicly available, is it?
Oh, yeah. There's online services where you can type in, you know, Johnson Space Center or the network name, which I think was jsc-nasa.gov. And they give you the whole IP block that they own.
Right.
And somewhat stupidly, NASA, just like the military and everyone else, wasn't using non-routable internet addresses, like which is safe for offices because they're private, you know, what I mean.
So this is what you call an internet-facing IP address on a desktop computer?
The desktop computers, the main servers.
So there was obviously no firewall at all. It's as if, so you could ping the computers in NASA on a desk from your own router?
Yeah, some of them wouldn't ping, but I'd still probe them just in case they didn't reply to pings, but they were still live machines.
Right. So you gained access to a whole raft of computer systems within...
Well...
Can I ask you, was it just NASA? Or?
Oh, no, they're all like this. I used that one single method to gain entry to the places I got into.
Right, and are you allowed to say which other places you got into? Or?
Well, I'll say it was the Army, the Navy and NASA and the Pentagon.
Right. And were they all on separate banks of IP addresses, each of those that you've just mentioned?
Oh, yeah, completely separate blocks.
Right,
yeah.
So you knew whether you were trying to access NASA or Pentagon or Army, Navy, they're all in completely different IP ranges.
Yeah, but once you're in there, it can get a bit confusing because once you start exploring, there's attached networks, other networks, private networks, and in the end, you're not really sure where you are after a while. But
right. All right, so it was quite comprehensive, this sort of amount of access that you had. And I've heard you say that there were other people there who also doing what you were doing. And would you say that you were one of the more prolific people doing that? Did you get an impression or would you not be able to say?
I can't say because I don't know what they were doing, but I did a simple command because when you're on there, at first I was using the command line interface, so it's just a black box. But you do a command on Windows called netstat, and you can see all the other connections to the same machine. And then you can look up those IP addresses and think, well, God, they're from China, they're from Denmark, they're from Turkey. It's like the whole world was in these machines. And I knew that was wrong, because there's no way people from all over the world should be on NASA machines. Mm-hmm. So they must have all been unwelcome guests like I was.
Right. So what period of time from when you first accessed the first system to when you got arrested, what's the duration we're talking?
Oh, like 18 months, 2 years.
Right. All right. So did you have any feeling at the time that you might get collared for this at all?
No, because I thought initially, I mean, the security so lax anyway. I thought, well, if it's that easy to get in, then they probably aren't monitoring properly.
Right. All right. So let's talk about what you saw before we go on to then what happened with the arrest and everything.
Yeah.
How long was it before you saw anything of any sort of significance?
Oh, a long time.
Right.
You know, months and months.
So did you not get bored with it, or was it always keeping your fascination with what kept you going back if you didn't get anything for months and months?
Oh, the promise of possibly finding something.
Right.
And the fact it was so easy, I thought at some point this is going to close the store and they'll stop running NetBIOS over the internet.
Right.
And you won't be able to find blank passwords so easily.
Right. And every time you were in communicating with a particular online IP address, would you always know which building you were accessing computers from?
No, not at all. Not the physical building.
Right.
No.
Right. All right. So just tell us when you got your first hit, if you like, as regards actually seeing something interesting.
The first thing was documentation. I used a program called Land Search, I think, that once you had control over the domain, because you'd get control of domain controllers, so you own the whole network, basically. And Land Search could actually search all the files and folders on every machine. And obviously it's hard because things aren't going to be called secret UFO data.pdf, are they? Mm. So, but I'd scan and look for documents, etc., etc. And I found an Excel spreadsheet that was actually called, or at least in the heading of the column, it said non-terrestrial officers. And I was like, my bloody God, that's just
non-terrestrial
incredible.
Officers.
Non-terrestrial officers with ranks and names. Mm-hmm. And then a separate sheet with tabs for material transfer between ships. And these were, I mean, I don't remember the names now. It's, you know, it's a long time ago. A lot of people give me a hard time for not remembering the names and stuff, but it was a long time ago.
Right.
But non-terrestrial officer thought, well, it must be, let's try and cut out all the possible conventional explanations first. I searched for that term. It was nowhere. It was nowhere at all. Now, if you search for the term, you only find links to me and stuff that I've said.
Right, I see.
So it wasn't a standard thing in the military at all.
Right.
So I took that to be they must have a secret space-based.
So the non-terrestrial officers, what? It couldn't be astronauts.
It could be. I mean, that's the thing. It's up to you how you interpret that, isn't it?
Right.
But these ships were called USS whatever and USS whatever.
So they started with USS.
Yeah. So that implies Navy, and I think the Navy do a lot of space stuff. Right. The US Navy.
And so, how many officers' names would you estimate were listed, and how many ships were listed?
Probably, oh God. I think there was probably one screen full of officers' names. So what's that, 25 rows on an Excel spreadsheet? Mm-hmm. And these were low resolution days as well. So you're talking about 800 by 600 screens, so not very big. But the ships was probably, I don't know, a third of the spreadsheet.
So estimate how many different ship names you saw?
Oh God, maybe 8 to 10.
8 or 10. Yeah. And am I right in thinking that you then tried to search for those specific names?
Oh, yeah.
Right, and...
Didn't find a thing.
Right, so you think that they could be classified...
Not the names of the people, the names of the ships.
Yeah, but they could be classified secret or top secret names of some sort of craft or ship.
Yeah, obviously not public.
Right. So. All right, and Gary, well, we'll continue this after the break.
Well, friends, wasn't that fascinating? I actually have kept in contact Mr. McKinnon, and I hope he can come on the show soon. What's amazing is this fits in exactly with what both Corey Good said last year and Randy Kramer said on my show last year, that we both have that there is a American and international secret space program. And what's fascinating is that Mr. McKinnon said that he had found evidence through the secret computers at the U.S. military of 8 or 9 different spacecraft that we have that goes into deep space. I think that there will be a lot more disclosures coming this year and into the next, and I'm looking forward to the day. I wanted to our next guest in about 10 minutes is a wonderful gentleman named L.C. Vincent. He does work on music and the 432 versus the 440 hertz standard. I'd like to play this is a song I played before, Imagine by John Lennon. And I think this is what we're headed to, a beautiful world living in harmony. But this song is different than what I played before because it's at the 432 hertz standard, which brings harmony when you listen to it. So I'd like to play that now as a lead-in to the end of the hour. And then we'll be coming back on air in about 5 or 6 minutes with Mr. Vincent to talk about the 432 versus the 440 hertz scales. Please stay tuned.
Kid. you